This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 9 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. As you know, these Friday shows are meant to be mailbag shows. And this is sort of going to be that, because I did get some draft-related questions, but my goodness, I think it'll be good for everyone to just make this show a what-the-hell-just-happened-in-round-one show. I can't even explain to you guys how crazy it was in my office last night. In my office, I have a TV, I have my couple laptops, so I had a laptop open with the draft feed, I had the TV, the Penguins and Capitals were playing on my television. Nothing is more stressful than playoff hockey, and meanwhile, I'm trying to watch and analyze the NFL draft, while on the other laptop, I have our content management system opened for NumberFire because we're publishing a lot of content. I'm trying to manage that. It was just a chaotic, hectic night, but my God, was it so much fun. I felt like I couldn't even feel my body for like 3 hours. I was levitating, as Denny Carter would say. But let's talk about the draft. Let's talk about what went down. I'll give you my takes. Some of them might be a little too hot to handle, but let's dig in. Everything started when the Bears traded up and then they got Mitch Trubisky with a second overall pick in the draft. The Bears gave up some of their future draft picks for a questionable prospect on a team that has a lot of holes. So here's the thing, and this goes for people who are yelling at the Browns for not taking a quarterback too. What the Browns are doing in building around that quarterback is they're allowing for the time when they do get a quarterback to be plopped into that system, and they'll maximize that quarterback's contract years. Whereas if you think about Chicago with what's going on with Mitch Trubisky, first of all, he might not even play year one or not play a lot, let's say. But second of all, when the Bears actually start to perform well and be good at the NFL level and be a good team, Mitch Trubisky might be on his fourth year, right? Even if Mitch Trubisky is really good, they're going to exercise his fifth year option when that team is actually good. Then all of a sudden you can't spend money on these other positions. Why do you think the Seahawks were good or had such a loaded roster for so long? And then on the opposite end, you see an example of kind of what the Bears are doing with Andrew Luck. If Mitch Trubisky is a good prospect, I'm not saying that he's an Andrew Luck prospect because I don't think Mitch Trubisky is even the best quarterback in this class. I think that's Pat Mahomes. But if Mitch Trubisky is this Pro Bowl quarterback and a true franchise quarterback, what the Bears are doing isn't far off from, say, what the Colts did. Now, the Bears have better pieces on defense. They have a decent line. They have a running game. But what I'm saying is you have to build around that, have a foundation for that quarterback before plopping that quarterback in. And that's really why the Browns are doing what they're doing. And I can't fathom why fans and analysts are so upset that the Browns didn't get Deshaun Watson with the 12th overall pick. If the Browns don't like a quarterback prospect, why should they just go and draft him just to get a quarterback? Instead, they're getting a lot of future picks for a class that actually has a lot of quarterbacks. Not only that, they drafted a quarterback last year. They are at least throwing some darts at the quarterback position. Imagine if they were to get Dak Prescott last year. No one would be talking about this. It just so happens that they didn't, because some of this is luck. The Cowboys were very lucky that they got Dak Prescott. This Browns regime has had 8 rounds to prove themselves, and people are already throwing them in the gutter. From a fantasy perspective, this Mitch Trubisky thing doesn't matter. It just does not matter. Especially redraft leagues. Mike Glennon's probably going to see the most work in under center for them this next year, I would assume. The Bears offense is Jordan Howard, and then you log out. Now let's move on to the next fantasy relevant pick, Leonard Fournette. Guys, I Sigmund Bloom and I talked about this on the podcast yesterday. Bloom even mentioned that there was a 50-50 shot that Fournette would go to Jacksonville, and that is precisely what happened. I wasn't shocked at all because of what I was reading, what smart guys like Sig was saying. Tom Coughlin being there, that's a great narrative to go off of. I'm not shocked that the Jaguars picked Leonard Fournette, but it's still amazingly hilarious to me that this happened. Like, you want to talk about bad teams staying bad? Just when you thought the Jaguars were about to turn the corner, they take an early down running back with questionable pass blocking and pass catching skills with the 4th overall pick in the draft. Also, did you notice that the first 12 picks of this draft, all of them, each pick, either had to do with stopping the pass with an edge rush, corner, they had one safety, or enforcing the pass with a quarterback or a wide receiver or a Christian McCaffrey, who is a semi-wide receiver. Except for Jacksonville's. Bad teams stay bad. Now, I don't mind Fournette as a prospect at all. I mean, my model, my running back model, has him objectively as the best running back in this draft. Although I personally like McCaffrey more, because I'm not just going off of a model and saying this is exactly what's going to happen. I like McCaffrey more at the NFL level, but my model objectively says Leonard Fournette is the best running back in this class. In fact, given his draft equity and where he was drafted fourth overall, he is a top 10 running back in this model that I built over this offseason. He's a top 10 running back over the last decade. Leonard Fournette's a very good prospect, but that doesn't mean that this was a good pick. I've ranted and talked about how running backs don't matter at the NFL level the way that a lot of teams or analysts or coaches, whoever, think that they matter. Not basic, but math shows us that this is the case. And if you want to get that take in more depth, I talked about this with Ezekiel Elliott in the very first episode of the Late Round Podcast in the intro before I talked to Evan Silva about the running back landscape. So if you want to get my take on the running back position as a whole, you can go listen to that. But it's crazy to me that people are using Ezekiel Elliott from last season as reason why this was okay for Jacksonville to do. If you think that Jacksonville's current situation on offense is anything like what Dallas had last season, you're out of your mind. Dallas has the best offensive line in the league. They had Tony Romo, which is what we assumed when they drafted Ezekiel Elliott. And then they just happened to fall into a Pro Bowl quarterback in the fourth round. Meanwhile, Jacksonville has a quarterback that they're trying to mask. The reason that the Cowboys drafted Ezekiel Elliott is because they wanted to enhance an already established offense. The reason why Jacksonville's drafting Leonard Fournette is because they're trying to mask their quarterback's deficiencies. Why are you ignoring what you have at the quarterback position? Why are you willingly acknowledging that the most important position in football on your team needs masked? That's not how you win in today's game. It's just not. Literally everything, anecdotal evidence and analytics, show you that you need a quarterback for sustained success at the NFL level. So will they win more games with Leonard Fournette? Well, here's the problem. They improved their defense dramatically over the offseason. The Jaguars are going to be a lot better than they were last season, or you would think, at least on paper. The problem now is not unlike what you saw with the dynamic between Zeke and Dak, where people are going to look at the correlation of more wins and what they did with the fourth overall pick and attribute it to that player. But guys, Dallas last season had the most efficient rookie quarterback of all time. Jacksonville this season might have a pretty freaking good defense. So we can't, right now, I'm saying, we can't look in hindsight and say it's because of Leonard Fournette. I want to say that right now before the season begins. If Jacksonville is better, if they're competitive, it's not going to be because of Leonard Fournette or solely because of Leonard Fournette. Especially when running backs, especially early down running backs who might not be able to catch the ball out of the backfield like Fournette, those guys are not making a dramatic impact on an NFL team. Leonard Fournette is an Adrian Peterson, not to his level type prospect. AP had question marks coming out, to be fair. So let's assume Leonard Fournette is an AP type prospect. I mentioned this before. I mentioned this on last week's mailbag episode. Adrian Peterson, he's such a dynamic, good running back. He changed the running back position. He's a Hall of Fame running back. I don't doubt that. I'm not saying that he's not. What I'm trying to say is that Adrian Peterson's impact on the Vikings is not nearly dramatic as you think Adrian Peterson's impact on the Vikings was. There's a reason that the only time the Vikings made a run in the playoffs with Adrian Peterson on their roster was when they had a Pro Bowl level quarterback. A good quarterback, Brett Favre. It's because running backs don't make that dramatic of an impact on the NFL field. Our expected points model shows that. I've talked about it many times. Rushing efficiency correlates to wins half as strongly as passing efficiency does. I just don't get it. I think that there's a situation here where if Fournette does not become a pass catcher, and if he does not become a good pass blocker, we're going to see TJ Yeldon in negative game scripts. And that's kind of scary from a fantasy perspective. So, yes, again, he's a top 10 guy in my model at the running back position. The dude's a freak. He's very, very good. Will he be okay in Jacksonville? I think he should be fine for fantasy, but I think he's probably going to be a little bit overdrafted in fantasy because I do think that there are question marks around, are the Jaguars going to be efficient enough offensively? And I like to associate my running backs with good quarterbacks and good efficiency through the air because that will improve scoring chances. But I think that the bottom line is that Jacksonville clearly wants to win games 13 to 10 each week. They want to play Fisher ball. That's not a fantastic situation for a fantasy running back, especially in PPR leagues for a guy like Fournette. So I think he'll be okay in fantasy. I just think that he might be a little bit too rich for my taste. So right after Fournette came a really surprising pick, and that was Corey Davis. I mentioned it before, Corey Davis to me was by far the best receiver prospect in this class. My model, again, I'm going to just say my model. It's just a model that I built this offseason to just kind of objectively look at the class by using metrics that correlate strongly from college to pro success. I wrote somewhat about this on NumberFire earlier in the offseason. I took some of those pieces and just attributed it to the model. But, you know, Corey Davis in this model isn't necessarily, if you look at the last 10 years, he's not like a top 10 guy like Fournette. He's more like a top 40 guy given where he landed. I do like the fit for Corey Davis here. The Titans get the best receiver in this draft, and they, of all teams, had the biggest need at wide receiver. There's no doubt in my mind. They were running with Rishard Matthews and Tajae Sharpe, and that's just not enough. But I will say, as much as I like the fit for Corey Davis, and I love it long-term too, because he's going to have Marcus Mariota for years, at least 4 or 5. The offense for a wide receiver, though, isn't that amazing for fantasy football purposes. The Titans last season ran the 11th fewest plays in football. They had the 5th fewest passes, and they had the 3rd lowest pass-to-run ratio. They like the exotic smash mouth with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. That's how they want to win games. And they have a quarterback that can help them do that because he's incredibly efficient. And that means that if Corey Davis is going to be relevant in fantasy or good in fantasy, he's going to need that efficiency. Marcus Mariota cannot be not efficient. And he has been. I mean, year one, he had a 5.1% touchdown rate, which is way above average. Last season, he had a crazy stretch where he had like over an 8% touchdown rate. He finished with 5.8%. I think Marcus Mariota is just one of those guys who's very good. And he's going to kind of buck the trend of the typical 4.5% touchdown rate. And that's great. That's what a wide receiver or pass catcher in the Tennessee offense needs. And they also play in a really bad division. That can't hurt. But I think that there is a too many mouths to feed in a run-first offense situation here. Rishard Matthews is still going to get some volume. Delanie Walker will still see some volume. Tajae Sharpe will still demand some volume. And even if Corey Davis sees 20% of that team's market share, which is a pretty strong number for a rookie wide receiver, then you're looking at, based on what they've done the last couple of years, especially last year with Mike Mularkey, you're looking at about 100 targets for Corey Davis. That's not great. I love the situation for Corey Davis long term. I love him as a dynasty pick. I think Corey Davis is easily the best wide receiver in this class. But from a redraft standpoint, I'm probably not going to own a lot of Corey Davis. And then we have Mike Williams. This Mike Williams pick might have been my least favorite in the entire first round. Maybe aside from the Bears trading up and getting Trubisky. I think the Mike Williams pick was atrocious. I'm not big on Williams. Again, my model's not big on him either. If you look at his market share numbers during his last season at Clemson, they were just above average. They weren't great. You know, we talked about Mike Williams yesterday on the show with Sigmund Bloom. And Bloom mentioned that Williams likes contact with corners. It's almost like he's seeking out contact. And he's better with contact. That stuff's not going to fly at the NFL level. He's not overly fast. Doesn't have a crazy measurable profile. I just worry about Mike Williams solely as a prospect moving from college to the pros. And then on top of that, you have a team, the Chargers, taking him with a top 10 pick when that team already has Keenan Allen, Tyrell Williams, Dontrell Inman, Hunter Henry, Antonio Gates, Melvin Gordon out of the backfield. You want to talk about too many mouths to feed? Those are a lot of mouths to feed. And I'm worried about Tyrell Williams. You know, honestly, because I'm not that big on Mike Williams, I think Tyrell Williams is a really interesting dynasty buy now. Because Tyrell Williams was really good last year. He had the highest difference between yards after the catch per catch versus expected yards after the catch per catch. Meaning, if you take a player's air yards profile and you regress it and you look at how many yards after the catch a player should have had versus how many he actually had, Tyrell Williams exceeded the should have had number more than any wide receiver in football last year. Tyrell Williams was incredibly good. That's just a quick and dirty way of measuring that. I had an article on it earlier this offseason on NumberFire, but bottom line with Tyrell Williams is that he was really underrated. He was a very, very good wide receiver last year. So overall with Mike Williams, don't think he's a good prospect. I think Tyrell Williams is good, and there's a lot of guys there. The market share number is just not going to be good for Mike Williams, especially early in his career. And then once some of those guys maybe dissipate or leave, then you don't have Phillip Rivers. You have questions at quarterback. Mike Williams is going to drop, I think, a lot in both dynasty and redraft. But even, you know, the thing is that people are going to overlook the fact that even Melvin Gordon saw a lot of targets. He played 13 games last year and he was still 14th in market share at the running back position. I just can't get behind this pick for a lot of reasons. I would not be targeting Mike Williams in dynasty or redraft at all. Now, two of the landing spots that I did get right among the fantasy assets in this draft was where Leonard Fournette landed and also where Christian McCaffrey landed. McCaffrey fell to the Panthers and is one of the least shocking picks in the draft, I think. There were some reports before the draft saying that McCaffrey was not an interest of the Panthers, but I think that was just all smoke. I also, one of my favorite parts of this draft was how there are two running backs picked in the first eight picks. And NFL Network, ESPN, they were all showing tweets from like Todd Gurley, I think was one, maybe Zeke was one. And they're all tweeting, the running back position is back, because they had two running backs in the top eight picks. And then there wasn't a single running back drafted from there on out. McCaffrey's not even a typical running back. I mean, he's just not. I mean, his assets, his skill set is that of a running back who can play slot receiver. And that's why Carolina drafted him. It's a really, really interesting situation that is almost impossible to get a read on right now, because you're looking at McCaffrey in a power run scheme on a team that doesn't target running backs out of the backfield. They were second lowest in percentage of team targets, the running backs in Carolina were, last season in the entire NFL. Jay Stu has seen more than 31 targets in a single season just once over his NFL career. The fit is just a little bit awkward, you know? Cam Newton doesn't throw the ball to his running backs. It's a scheme that doesn't seem to fit a body type like Christian McCaffrey. Leonard Fournette just made a lot more sense at that pick. Obviously, he was gone. Leonard Fournette seems to fit Carolina more. But if Carolina changes things up, I'm totally cool with this. Because, like I said, McCaffrey can play slot. That's a need that they have. And they can change things up a bit. They can change their offense a bit. From strictly a fantasy standpoint, if you're looking at the numbers, I think that a realistic ceiling for McCaffrey from a market share standpoint, year one, might be 12, 13%, which is a really high number. And if they throw the ball maybe 550 or so times, then you're looking at 70 or so targets. That's not that bad. And if we see him see, 150 carries in that backfield, then he's going to be a good fantasy asset. He'll be fine. I just don't know where he's going to land average draft position wise, because I think that there's going to be a lot of people who are overly high on him, just like most rookies. So I don't know, again, how much Christian McCaffrey I'm really going to own. It's just a really huge guessing game. The other thing too is Jay Stu's still there, so we don't know what that backfield market share is going to look like. I mean, saying 150 carries his rookie season is probably incredibly optimistic for Christian McCaffrey. But like I said, this is kind of a chicken or egg situation. Cam Newton may not be throwing to his running backs because they didn't have a pass-catching running back, or a good one. But it could also be that Cam Newton isn't that type of quarterback. He's a big-armed guy that likes to get the ball down the field. So because of that, this McCaffrey situation is incredibly tough to predict from a fantasy standpoint. It's just very, very difficult. But according to my model, he, like Leonard Fournette, is a top 10 prospect over the last 10 years, over the last decade. Top, I think McCaffrey might be like 12th. So maybe he's a fringe top 10 guy. I just don't necessarily love the location from a fantasy standpoint. The next fantasy relevant guy was John Ross with the very next pick. He went to Cincinnati. I do think that the Bengals reached for John Ross because of his medicals, and the sample size isn't that significant on him. He's a smaller guy, so you have to be a little bit worried about that. But my God, he has great speed. I do think that it's the perfect situation for John Ross. The Bengals get him at 9. He's a good field stretcher, complement to AJ Green. You have Tyler Boyd in the slot. I mean, they know what they're doing with this pick. They know what they want John Ross to be. From a fantasy standpoint, from a volume standpoint, the person who hurts most from this John Ross signing is Brandon LaFell. Brandon LaFell's opportunity just dwindled last night when John Ross was selected, which is fine because it's Brandon LaFell. But I will say that LaFell's general presence on this team will still hinder John Ross in some way. So I'm not expecting a huge year one from John Ross. I don't think I was expecting a huge year one from John Ross regardless. But this, you know, him being on the Bengals with a guy who's already gobbling up a ton of targets in AJ Green, I don't love that. What I do love about this pick is I've mentioned this name before as a late round target in fantasy. This is going to help Andy Dalton. I've mentioned and talked about touchdown rates and why I love touchdown rates so much. And that was a key reason why I drafted Matt Ryan a lot last year, is because we see this boomerang effect with touchdown rates where one year it's low and then it overcorrects and it goes too high. That's what happened with Andy Dalton last year. 2 years ago, let's not forget, 2 years ago, Andy Dalton was a legitimate MVP candidate before he got hurt. I know that sounds crazy to hear right now, but he was playing out of his mind. Andy Dalton was really good in 2015, and then he got hurt and AJ McCarron came in. That season, he had a 6.5% touchdown rate. Again, the average over the last decade is about 4.5%. Andy Dalton was at 6.5%. And then last year, things regressed. I understand AJ Green didn't play a full season, but things regressed, and he had a 3.2% touchdown rate, which is below his career average and the league's average. Andy Dalton is not a below average, way below average quarterback, even according to efficiency. So this, to me, makes Andy Dalton a more attractive fantasy asset because you have a field stretcher in John Ross now who can give you those splash plays along with that elite wide receiver in AJ Green and pass-catching running back Gio Bernard out of the backfield. And Tyler Boyd is going to be able to move to his more natural position in the slot. I love the pick for Cincinnati if John Ross is healthy. I think it's a great real football pick. Fills a need. Helps them dramatically, I think, on offense if he is what he could be. And I think that as a result of all that, Andy Dalton is going to be one of my favorite late-round quarterback targets this year. So I'm going to ignore the Patrick Mahomes pick because it's not going to have that much of an immediate impact, because I'm assuming that Alex Smith is still going to play quarterback for Kansas City this season. Mahomes is just kind of sitting back waiting for his turn. But I do want to dig into Deshaun Watson. Overall, I don't really think that this should change the outlook of the Texans pass catchers at all, at least in the short term. The biggest problem is that this is 100% going to be a run-first team. That's what they do. And rookie quarterbacks also aren't very strong for wide receivers. My buddy Rich Rebar, you guys know him at Lord Reeves on Twitter, he's been studying up the impact that rookie quarterbacks have on the rest of their team from a fantasy perspective. And he actually tweeted this back on April 19th. He said, if Houston goes rookie quarterback, there have been 42 rookie quarterbacks to start 8+ games since 2000. Only 4 top 12 wide receivers have been attached to those passers. DeAndre Hopkins has an ADP around wide receiver 12. And the other thing with DeAndre Hopkins is I think we're chasing what he did at the start of 2015. Because at the start of 2015, the Texans' defense was putrid, and DeAndre Hopkins was pacing to break the targets record. He was easily the number one wide receiver in fantasy, and then once Houston's defense started to perform to the level that they should have performed to, he didn't become as valuable of a fantasy asset because he wasn't seeing as much volume. This is what happens in the NFL. A defense gets better. And I'll talk about this more in a second, but the defense gets better. Teams are now not needing to throw the ball twice as much as they run the ball. You're going to have a more balanced offense naturally. That's how game script works. And game script for the Texans is a fantasy football dumpster fire because they have a good defense and they want to run the football. It's not like you're in a Green Bay where you have an efficient quarterback where you know you can throw the football. And let's just pretend Green Bay's defense was really, really good. They would still be throwing the football, at least a relatively decent amount. Houston, if they have a lead, they're going to want to grind clock, especially with a rookie quarterback or Tom Savage. So I don't want to look at this Watson pick as anything at all from a short-term perspective, redraft standpoint. I'm avoiding DeAndre Hopkins in redraft this year. There's no way I'm spending a second-round pick on DeAndre Hopkins. The same generally goes for Allen Robinson now that they picked Leonard Fournette, and you can kind of see what they're trying to do. I worry about his volume. But DeAndre Hopkins especially. At least with Allen Robinson, you have more of a D-gaff quarterback who we've seen throw the ball down the field, and Allen Robinson has a good air yards profile. DeAndre Hopkins, I'm just completely worried about. I would avoid him at all costs this year. I got this question from Paul in St. Louis. He says, how do you feel about Jameis getting Goat J. Howard instead of O.J. Howard? That was cute. So, Jameis now has DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, and a decent backfield, even if they didn't get Dalvin Cook. I mean, Jameis Winston is in a supremely good situation, but like I said, you have to look at what the team wants to do or how the team is trending. And what happened last season with this Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense is volume decreased in the passing game as that team got better. They started 3-5, they finished 9-7, and over that second half stretch, their pass to run, their drop back to run ratio was 1.20, whenever during the first half of the season it was 1.52. Mike Evans hurt because of that. That's why Mike Evans dropped in fantasy and didn't perform like he did during the first half of the season, is because the Buccaneers defense started playing better. They started winning games, so they didn't have to throw the ball as much with Jameis Winston. Now, the moves that they're making are saying Jameis Winston can throw the ball because now he's targeting DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, and O.J. Howard. I mean, my goodness. They already have Cameron Brate. Winston will be a good fantasy quarterback. But again, fantasy quarterbacks, number one, don't really matter that much. And number two, I mean, it's loaded. There are so many good fantasy quarterbacks. The only way that Jameis Winston is a true difference maker in fantasy football is if he finishes in the top two or three at the position, which I just can't envision. So while I love this move of O.J. Howard to Tampa Bay, you're giving Jameis Winston towers to throw to. His inaccuracy issues, who cares? Who cares? He's throwing the ball to Mike Evans and O.J. Howard. He's got DeSean Jackson deep. Even with that, though, I don't think Jameis Winston is worth a reach in fantasy football because I don't think any quarterback is worth a reach in fantasy football. The next two big tight ends that fell off the board were in the 20s. That was Evan Ingram and Cleveland ruining my day by drafting David Njoku. My pants were ready to come off if the Steelers were able to get David Njoku. Not only because he would dominate in that offense, but because I'm a Steeler fan. David Njoku would have been unreal in black and gold. Like, do you remember what the Steelers offense looked like with a healthy Ladarius Green last year? And then you add the possibility of having Martavis Bryant, and then they get David Njoku. That would be unreal. Unreal. There's a reason the Browns traded up where they did, because the Browns are analytically driven. They see that David Njoku is a freak of nature, measurables wise, and they knew that the Steelers wanted him. The Steelers, as a fit for David Njoku, he would have just fallen into their lap. But the Browns got him. They traded up for him. And then, like I said, Evan Ingram went to the Giants. The Evan Ingram pick, I was kind of shocked about. I expected them to get David Njoku. And the reason for that is, at least in the short term, they have pass catching ability. They have Brandon Marshall, Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard in the slot. David Njoku is a better blocker. He's more of a traditional tight end, if you will, whereas Evan Ingram is a tweener. He can play wide receiver and tight end, which I just don't see that short-term need as much. But again, they're thinking longer term. But from a redraft standpoint, I'm thinking shorter term. So I'm not going to be that into Evan Ingram this season. I don't think you should be into David Njoku either, because he's playing for Cleveland and we don't really know what that offense is going to look like. They're still building for the future. And then on top of that, you have tight ends in general. And this goes back to O.J. Howard as well. Tight ends just don't do a lot during their rookie season. Since 2000, the highest yardage total from a tight end is 894 from Jeremy Shockey. And only John Carlson and Shockey hit over 600 yards receiving. Rob Gronkowski hit double-digit touchdowns because he's Rob Gronkowski and he's the greatest tight end of all time, at least pass-catching tight end. And then Hunter Henry hit 8 last year, which was somewhat of an anomaly. We're just asking a lot for a tight end to be relevant as a rookie and for them to be more than just a streaming option. This last one is actually a question from Puckology on Twitter. He says, give me a fire take on the draft that could be a surprise in fantasy football. So from here on out, who are some surprises, or I'll give a fire take. I don't know. I'm not good at giving fire takes. I like to spit fire, but I don't like giving fire takes because I don't really, my brain doesn't work that way. But I'll say this. I could see a team trading up for Dalvin Cook at the beginning of the second round. I could also envision a scenario where Dalvin Cook goes to Cincinnati and he joins a crowded backfield, which would then play into what I had talked about in the intro of the show with Sig, in that the opportunity for running backs isn't as great as a lot of people think that it is. Because now all of a sudden you're taking the third best running back in the draft, pretty much consensus-wise, and you're throwing him, well, aside from Joe Mixon, I'm talking strictly from a prospect standpoint, you're throwing him then into a situation with Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard where he's not going to see as much work as he would on another team. I think the big thing that you have to keep an eye out on tonight is the Green Bay and Washington backfields. There was a report that Ian Rappaport sent out before I started recording this that the Washington's trying to shop Matt Jones. Who in the world is trying to buy Matt Jones? Who would trade for Matt Jones? You have a team in why, like, isn't that a red flag? Like, someone's like, hey, I need to get rid of something that I really need. This is like if you were starving, you haven't eaten all day, and you finally get dinner, and you just give the dinner away. Like, if I'm accepting that dinner and I'm going to eat that dinner, I'm going to think that that dinner is poisonous. Like, Washington needs a running back, and then they're saying, we're going to trade a running back that we drafted in the third round. It doesn't make any sense. Why would a team sit there and be like, yeah, sure, I'll take Matt Jones from you since you don't want him. Since you don't want him when he plays a position that you're about to draft. What does that tell you? It tells you that Matt Jones is garbage. Here's sort of a hot take, though. I think that Alvin Kamara is going to be overdrafted. You just don't have that kind of market share in college and have it translate to the NFL level seamlessly. There, try to find one example where a prospect in his final season coming out saw less than 20% of his team's carries and then became a massive NFL success. Alvin Kamara could easily be a Leon Washington type at the NFL level. I think that he's a good pass catcher. I think that he could be a good third down back, change of pace guy, and he's going to be electric. He's going to have some big plays, but he's going to be overdrafted. I could see Philadelphia taking Alvin Kamara. Is that hot? I don't know if that's super hot. I really, really hope, though, that he does not go to New Orleans, because my takes on Kamara this offseason will look really, really bad, because he'll probably thrive in New Orleans, because who doesn't thrive in New Orleans? But that'll be my hot take. Something happens with Alvin Kamara and he's overdrafted. Is that okay? Probably not. That's really not a hot take at all. But Matt Jones, guys, who's going to trade for Matt Jones? All right, that'll do it for the show. Thank you guys so much for listening to me rant and talk about this first round. If you want to listen to more podcasts, you can go subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or Google Play by searching Number Fire NFL Podcasts. Enjoy the rest of the draft, guys, and I'll talk to you all next week.